Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Tight Bean. This is episode number 14. We are recording this June 15th, 2018. I'm Eric. I am joined tonight by Shannon. Shannon, how you doing?
I'm great. You know, I'm having my coffee. Awesome. Be up all night. It's going to be worth it. Ready to talk about this episode. I've just read this bit last week, and I've been waiting to see it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you know, coffee at 9:30 at night is always a good thing. The later you can consume your coffee, the more effective the caffeine is, right?
It works for Holden, doesn't it?
It does.
He looks very well adjusted with his life.
It does. But you know
what?
In space,
to fight pirates.
It's always nighttime, though. So,
technically.
All right. Andrea, how are you tonight?
I am fantastic.
All right. Lou, how are you doing?
Oh, well, everything is okay.
Wow, that was really good.
I'm doing great.
Whoa.
Yeah, see, that's what you
get.
Wow,
those were both very good impressions, guys.
When you don't show up to the recording. So Lou actually said in our Discord channel, he said that I had permission to speak for him for this recording.
He gave us permission.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce the rest of the episode here. Hold on, here's Lou.
Hey, the final frontier.
Oh my god.
These are the voices of the Resonant
Men. Okay, I'll stop it there. He's going to kill me.
That was a very weird thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I only had a couple of choices. It was that.
Or I could have gone with something deeper.
That actually sounds like Lou.
Well, you know, I kind of do, I guess.
This is so strange.
I could sing something. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
But do you have cats that are going to jump behind you at random intervals?
I don't, but that's only the video part of the call anyway. So until we start streaming our recordings on Twitch, which could happen as early as next month, nobody else would get to see that anyway.
Nice plug.
So, yeah, I thought I'd get that in now. Yeah. All right. So, real quick network announcement. I think we talked about this before, but for those who were asking, and maybe you don't stick around all the way to the end of the episode where we talk about this stuff in the credits, we are now up on all of the places, or at least all the important ones. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry. Email subscription. What am I forgetting? Whatever podcast thing you want to plug the RSS feed
into. Pen and paper, you know.
Well, we haven't done the transcription thing yet. There are services we could do that with, but yeah, that costs money.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There was a lot of stuff in this episode. This is, I have to say, I liked this episode better than the last one. What did you guys think? Andrea, what are your thoughts just in a nutshell on this episode?
There was a lot of S-H-I-T that went down in this episode. You really need to watch it more than once to really understand what's going on and to really take in all the clues that are thrown around in this episode. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice buildup from what we've already been seeing.
Yeah. Shannon, what about you?
Yeah, I really liked this episode. I, for instance, like, you know, you kind of, book readers kind of got the sense of where it was going to end, but I'm sitting there and we had like 3 minutes left. And I was just like, can we fit anything in these 3 minutes? And my God, did they fit something in those 3 minutes? This episode, like, it almost like didn't stop. Even in the slower parts, it was moving. And I just like, which is great because I talked about inertia. So that's like how I felt. I felt constantly in motion because it just, everything was just going. Even when I'm just watching Holden slowly descend through a tunnel, I'm just like, what is going to happen next? It was just, I was just freaking out the whole time. It was just such a great episode. And it was just, there was a lot of fun and a lot of like dread.
Yeah.
And it just worked really well. I really loved it. And with a title as whimsical as Dandelion Sky, like, I don't know, I didn't feel any whimsy there.
Yeah, no whimsy. There's a pretty lighthearted episode title there. But, you know, there was a lot of between the special effects, which I thought in this episode were just off the hook, like the visual mm-hmm. design and then the execution of that design, I thought was really impressive. And as you said, kind of the, you know, the what's next, the anticipation of where things are about to go. This wasn't an intense episode. I like this one.
It really doesn't feel like we have 3 episodes left, though. I know. It just, that's the sad thing.
Every season so far, this show scares the crap out of me because we get to near the end of the season and I'm like, you can't, there's not enough time. You can't wrap things mm-hmm. up. How are you going to do this? And they did it in season 1 and they did it in season 2. I'm hopeful they'll do it in season 3, but man, the last couple of episodes are going to be just at a breakneck pace then.
I'm going to be so stressed.
Yeah, right?
Now we're Lou all going to know what it's like to be on the Rossi. We're all going to know.
Lou did want me to throw in that he thought that this was a really good episode.
Yeah, he's real positive about this one.
Yeah, yeah. He was real positive.
Proud of him.
Unlike 2 episodes ago. That's okay. I'm going to still keep giving him crap for that, though, because I think it's funny. All right, so let's talk about the actual story elements, the different plot lines in this episode. Andrea, why don't you talk to us about what's going on the Thomas Prince?
Oh, the Thomas Prince. Where do I start? It was very interesting to see how Anna's desire to want to explore this unknown causes her to feel like she has failed her mission. As a minister, mm-hmm. It's very interesting that from the very beginning, there is somebody calling out and wanting her help, but she is too busy focusing on something else. And it's very, she's human. And that's what we gather from this, that she does make the mistakes and she does try to make amends based on what she's done. So we get the powerful suicide moment after one of the people from the ship, his name is Jordan. I don't know his actual.
Oh, I saw it and I forgot. It's somewhere. On his coat too. Like it's right there and I keep forgetting what his last name is.
But yeah, Jordan's suicide actually shocked me. It just was so quick. And it just like that, it just with a pull of the trigger, he's gone. And it's just so sad to see that he does try to get her to talk. He tries to reach out. He tries to get that comfort because he feels alone and he doesn't get it. So it's very interesting that after Anna realizes that he dies, she says that he was scared and she ignored him and he killed himself because she was too distracted. And then she says, I'm not a scientist. I'm a minister, physics, biology, alien artifacts. I want to know all about them, but that's not my job. I'm here to talk to people, to offer comfort where it's needed, sit with people when they're scared and grieving. And it's sad to see her so vulnerable because it almost feels like she cannot enjoy this unknown, this calling that she has within herself. So I thought it was really interesting side of her.
Yeah. Again, the way they handle character development on this show continues to fascinate me. And I keep getting surprised, even though I shouldn't be surprised anymore at this point. Every time they have a character on the show, the good guys, they always demonstrate them doing something wrong. The bad guys, they always demonstrate them doing something right. And they really hammer home the fact that these people are human.
Yeah.
And it makes them really relatable. But this, to me, is probably one of the most fascinating portrayals of suicide in modern TV fiction. Because you've always got the suicide from the point of view of the person who's going through this pain and this hopelessness and the struggle to find a reason to go on and such. You never really see the other story. There are always 2 stories in a suicide. There's the person who commits suicide, and then there are the effects that it has on everybody around them. And like you said, Andrea, we didn't see, like, they were so smart to do it off screen because all of a sudden, no, he's gone. What? No, wait a minute. No, he was just here. Well, no, he's gone now. I mean, that's how it happens. Mm-hmm. And it's my experiences with it. I mean, I've been the person seeking help like he was and being unable to find it. And that takes that sense of hopelessness and it just amplifies it so, so much. I have been the person who has been contacted for help and missed the signals like Anna did. And that's crushing after the fact. And then I've been in the fortunate position to have actually helped a lot of people down off the ledge. I used to be a 911 dispatcher. I've taken 911 calls, but then also just in personal lives, people I've known. And it's interesting how you can be used to looking for signals for things like this. And then just you're distracted or you're having a bad day yourself. You just don't pick up on the signals and then the person's gone. And Anna wasn't doing anything wrong.
No.
She was just really distracted. And distracted by something, I mean, this is one of the biggest miracles of her lifetime, as she pointed out. Like, this is a big deal. And now he's gone. But, like, this is her role in this community, though, is to take care of these people. And I appreciate the fact that she recognizes it. She does need to step away from the consoles and the monitoring stations and the telemetry and stuff like that. She does need to get back to taking care of the people who are actually responsible for those things. That's her role in this. And, you know, she messed up. I can relate to that. I sympathize with her. I feel bad for the pain that now she's going through. But just, wow, what a fascinating way to tell that aspect of a story and to show the guilt that someone has for missing out on those signals, because we all miss out on signals of other people around us in pain. Even if they don't commit suicide, people still go through pain and we don't always see it. Even if these people are people that we care about more than anything else in the world, we miss it sometimes.
And I am one of the things I had written down for this was what she said, you know, near the end of her eulogy was, we can treat each other gently, reach out to those in need. It will increase our joy and diminish our pain, and it will honor Jordan. And in my head, right, I just, that clicked as do for each other what I didn't do. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I took from that. There was something else I took from it on rewatch. The last scene we see him before the scene where he actually, you know, shoots himself, there is when they're talking about how the slow zone is grabbing things, right? Mm-hmm. And the scientist man, I don't know if we've ever caught his name, says he's talking about what happened to the ships that were grabbed and the objects that were grabbed. And he says, the internal systems are functioning normally, even if the object is stopped. If an object were to break the speed limit inside this ship, nothing would happen to it. We should test that. And my heart kind of stopped because I already knew what was going to happen at this point. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy God, that was the test. This man shot himself. The bullet broke the speed limit. Because later on the episode, we see people shoot on the station and the bullets are stopped because they broke the speed limit. He was on a ship that was in the slow zone, broke the speed limit, and nothing stopped it. And like, not, Anna couldn't stop it, and the slow zone couldn't stop it. It happened. And so when I watched that, when I watched it again, and it's leading up to the actual thing, I'm sitting there like, my God, like, holy crap. They were talking about this. They were talking about, we should test this. And it's like, this is the worst way to right. have your theory proven. And nobody probably thought of that when it happened, like, because then when, of course, the officer says to her, oh, it was an accident. His sidearm went off when he was cleaning it. And she says, it's a terrible euphemism. Like, she knows what it means. He didn't. And so in my brain, I wondered if he had known, would it have clicked to him that, my God, this thing happened that I was literally talking about in front of this guy, not what, an hour ago? Like, it just kind right. of hit me, like, the things that you don't see, like, forgotten arm, the things you don't see coming. And I kind of felt it coming from the end of that scene when she asked him if he was okay and he said he was. I kind of felt it coming, but like upon rewatch, when I heard that line, I was like, oh my God. Like, this kind of gives it a whole more horrific spin than just that.
It's really interesting because when those things about testing the speed limit came about, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, somebody somewhere is gonna fire. But it was really shocking to see Jordan just kill himself. Like, it just happened. And I was like, whoa, they really went there and we saw everything. It was just insane.
I'll be honest, I didn't pick up on that. That was a really good catch. I was so focused on the Anna aspect of the storyline that the whole aspect of this being the test of the speed limit on the ship and all that, like, as you're saying that right now, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I totally missed that whole thing. I was so focused on the guilt that Anna was going through. Yeah.
I was really fascinated by that conversation as it was. Like, I wrote down something she said as well about Sis, how the station interprets fast moving things as threats. She figures, she figured it out. If it's fast moving, it's a threat, and that's how it isolates them. Right. And so I was paying a lot of attention to that conversation because I didn't when I was watching it. And that's when I picked it up. I was like, you know, listen to them talk about why things are happening because they're the only ones who are talking about the why, right? And the how. Right. And so I was really paying attention to that conversation because that's what I do. I pause it whenever I see a line because I want to write it down. That's why it takes so long for me to rewatch an episode. That's why sometimes I don't finish.
Hey, that's okay.
So when I picked up on that line, I literally, my heart just stopped. I could not, like, the fact that, I mean, the show rewards rewatching. And that's one of the more horrific rewards you're going to get. The fact that they were literally like, hey, we should test fast moving objects on the ship. And then literally 5 minutes later, this character who is clearly shaken and troubled, just does it. He tests it.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
It's, and you know, people in the military kind of get this. If you've ever been deployed or something, when you're in a situation like this, I mean, they're in the slow zone. This is something that has never even been conceived of in human history, let alone experienced. Like, the nature of the physics of this is just beyond comprehension. When you're in an environment like that, you can't process and your brain can't handle it. That really sets you up to have this sort of thing exacerbated and amplified. And I'm really glad that if they were going to tackle suicide on this show, that they did it here. Mm-hmm. I think that this is, again, like with everything else in the show, this makes sense in this spot. And I think that that's awesome. The situation isn't awesome. The skill of the writing is awesome, that they recognize this as the appropriate place to put something as heavy hitting as this into the show to kind of demonstrate. But I see, and that's the other thing too about the suicide, aside from the individual aspect of Anna's character development and the physics about, well, now they do know whether it's going to work. There's also just, it kind of shows that everybody here is going through something serious. Everybody's handling it differently. But even though we're not showing what's going on in the minds of every single character, we're getting little bits and pieces. We had the guy who was getting on the shuttle to basically abandon his post. We had the priest who was doing the same thing. We have this guy who's committing suicide. We have Melba, who is in a slightly different situation. We have Tilly, who's dealing with things in her way. And we have Anna. Like, we are getting glimpses of everybody. And so now we really have it established that nobody is not going through some sort of a psychological dilemma, just experiencing being there.
It's actually really interesting because just talking about it right now, it brings me back to Battlestar Galactica, because we do see an occurrence of suicide because faith is shaken, because all hope is lost. And I'm not going to go into it for the people that have not watched Battlestar. I recommend it.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting that the loss is there. We feel it. There is no comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
People suffer because of it. And people deal with the things that are happening in so many different ways. So it's very interesting to get these different perspectives, like you were saying, Eric. Mm-hmm. So the way that they handled the suicide was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
And very shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on the Thomas Prince that we need to talk about?
I think we should talk about Tilly and Clarissa.
Mm-hmm.
Clarissa? Who's Clarissa?
Who is Clarissa?
Who are you talking about?
Who is she? What is she? How has she come to be here?
I have to say, no offense to all of the Melbas out there who might be listening. I do kind of like the name Clarissa better than Melba. Like, it has a nicer ring to it.
Well, she is from a rich family that likes fancy names.
Yes.
I mean, consider Juliet Andromeda Mal.
Right. And Melba is about as far away. Melba is about as far away from like a snooty type of a name as you can get.
Mm-hmm. Melba just reminds me of like a Wicked or Wizard of Oz kind of name. Like she's about to like walk. Yeah, like she's about to walk out with a dress and start singing to us.
the Wicked Witch of the East.
I really hope we don't have any musical episodes on this series.
No, I mean, I know it's that's kind coming. Of a thing, I'm telling you, it's going to be called Thomas Prince, a happy musical.
A happy musical. Oh, we're just.
Wow.
But there was something that was said after Tilly confronted her finally near the end of the episode that I didn't listen to the episode, so I don't know if you cut it out or not. But in one of the episodes, I was talking about how Clarissa now was blaming Holden for literally everything she did because it's his fault. She's only doing this because of him. And she says that to Tilly. She says straight up, it's not my father's fault. It's Holden's. And so he has to go down. And I literally sat there just like punching the air, just like I said that. But there she is. She's blaming everything on Holden. Excellent. Now I know. But yeah, there she is. She's blaming everything on Holden. My father, who did something awful, clearly did nothing wrong. It's all Holden's fault because he brought him down. My father's a genius. She hasn't let go of this pedestal she has put him on. And it is leading her to just do terrible things and still blame this other guy on it. And here she is about to kill Tilly.
Yeah.
Because Tilly knows. And this will be Holden's fault, too.
Yeah, but it's just Tilly, right? I mean,
I love Tilly.
She's the best friend that you really want to have.
I mean, you can't tell me you didn't snicker when she was hearing about inertia and just went, I feel like there's a sex joke in there, but I'm not finding it.
Yeah, see, I use that line constantly. I do.
I love her. And her coffee and alcohol double fist joke.
Right.
Like, come on. I mean, she
seems like the type of person that would be really good to have around to get you into parties and things like that. So like she'd be a really good wingman to have, I think.
Yeah.
So in that regard, okay. Yeah, I guess we could keep her around.
I think that the lesson we get from the whole entire Tilly and Clarissa thing is that whatever happens to you in life, just blame Holden.
Just blame Holden.
Right.
You crash your car, effing Holden.
Hold on a minute.
I think I see what's going on here. Andrea, you're Canadian, right? So yeah. This blame Canada, the meme that's been around
for the last decade or two.
So right. She just wants us to move on to blame something else.
Oh, that's true.
That's what everybody in the books does, though. And I find it quite amusing.
Well, it works.
Blame him.
The man just wants to drink coffee, snuggle his girlfriend, and be in space. And everyone just wants to blame him for everything. It's fun.
Well, good timing. His girlfriend's coming back, and what's he do? He takes off.
He literally leaves as soon as
with
she leaves.
With his imaginary friend.
With his imaginary friend, yes. Effing Holden.
Blame him for everything.
Anything else on the Thomas Prince?
Nope.
All right. How about the Martian skiff? We'll put off the Holden thing until the end. Let's bury the lead there. Shannon, tell us about the Martian skiff and what's going on with Bobby and her fellow Marines.
So I want to start this segment off. Like I said, I've been rereading the third book, and I read these sequence of chapters on Friday. So this is fresh in my mind.
Uh-huh.
When Holden, in the book, when Holden is on his way to the station, and nothing has really changed this much except for Bobby. In the books, Holden, when he sees the Martians, thinks to himself, you know, it'd be really interesting and nice if Bobby were being sent next to me. I wonder if Bobby is being sent after me. And in the book, no, she isn't. So I really loved it in the show they did. I thought, like, especially having just read it, I thought it was funny. It's almost like the Holden of the past is just like making it happen for the Holden of the future.
Right.
But yeah, so Bobby is naturally, because her ship is the one that followed the Rocinante into the ring, Bobby is one of the Marines that is sent to go stop Holden. And because she knows him, the lieutenant, who is a strict man, he's a very strict man. She convinces him to let her try and communicate with Holden because she cares about him and she's defending him the entire scene. Like, you know, when they're like, who's going to the station? She's like, that's probably Holden. That would be his style. And she's defending him to her fellow Marines because she doesn't believe he blew up the Seong-un. She knows him. And she says, like, that's definitely not his style. But you can make the argument that he's crazy, which made me laugh as well. And there were just a lot of really, like, funny moments. Like, I got a lot of laughs out of the moment when she tried to call him. And he's just like, it's Bobby. And it's just a long pause. Really? and how he's yelling at Miller.
Right.
Over the, while she's trying to talk to him. He's like, no, shut up. No, not you. But my favorite was the very quiet monkeys and microwaves. because that conversation's in the book. So like it's funny if you read the because you know what he's saying to him, but like Bobby's just listening, he's just, monkeys and microwaves? Exactly. Yeah. Like it's so funny because we know he's fine and Bobby is telling everyone he's fine. And meanwhile, he's just a mess. And so that's why I also really appreciate it. The lieutenant said, and I think this is a line we should hang on to because we've discussed this in other episodes before. He's cracked. Everyone's got a breaking point. And I'm sure he's not the only one in this godforsaken place.
Yeah.
So,
which, I mean, we just saw that on the Thomas Prince.
Yep.
Over and
exactly.
over again.
Exactly. Yep. And Bobby's going to follow her orders, whether Holden's her friend or not.
Yeah.
And
now, I will admit, when we talk about the books, I remember the milestones from the books, but like the monkeys and microwaves thing, I didn't remember anything about that from the book. I still don't because it's been so long since I've read this particular book. I still thought it was funny. I mean, it's just so like, wait a minute. What
did he just say?
Like, yeah.
Monkeys and microwaves?
Yeah.
Everybody in the background is like, he's not insane. He's not insane. He's not insane. Oh, you just screwed yourself over.
Yeah. Come on. Are you sure he's not insane?
And it's interesting. It's interesting because the lieutenant is like, does that sound rational to you? And Bobby's like, not entirely. But then she has to retract and she has to be like, no, I'm a Marine. I need to act like it. No, sir, it did not. So it's really interesting because she has to separate, okay, this was my friend, and be like, okay, this is who I am. I need to act like I'm a Marine and I have a mission to accomplish. So it's very interesting because we do see a little bit of that toss and turn because she doesn't know what exactly is going on with Holden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's going right back into proto-molecule tech, which I love that shot of the reflection.
Yes.
On her helmet because and there's like a little bit of hesitation and fear in her face because the worst things that have ever happened to her have happened at the end of the smoking gun and is the protomolecule. And so to see her looking at this magic station that just let Holden in, like and she's going to go in there after him. Like, oh man, I was like, I could not imagine how she's feeling right now, but you can see it on her face. And the fact that it's reflected in her helmet as she's making that face.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful shot, and it told a lot without saying anything.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, this, God.
This
I'm
would
just
be
thinking
a good time
about
to
it again.
Transition over to Holden, but instead.
No, not yet.
Instead, let's go to the behemoth. Andrea, what's going on the behemoth?
The behemoth.
The behemoth.
It sounds so cool. It sounds
can
like a
you say
match.
The behemoth in the deep voice? Eric?
Oh, yes.
Can I say the behemoth in the deep voice?
Yeah, with the voice modulator.
Introduce the behemoth in your deep voice.
Yeah, can you please?
And now, the behemoth.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
There, does that work?
He should perfect. Introduce every single part like that.
It's only that cool with the word the behemoth.
Behemoth.
Yeah, that is kind of fitting.
Everybody turns into men.
It is the biggest ship in the system, guys.
So right, what is going on the behemoth, though?
I'm going to say something. Uh-oh. Agree, disagree. You guys have to let me know what you guys think. I was really scared in the direction that they were going to take Drummer. Mm-hmm. I didn't want Drummer to be caught off guard by everything going around her. And during this episode, and also the last episode, she's starting to pick up that there's something going on. She's not dumb. And she knows what Ashford is doing. He confronts her about letting Naomi leave. And she says that this isn't a slave ship. He confronts her and says this is a warship. And then she responds back and says, I'm the captain. And it was nice to hear her say that, because she has almost been tossing and turning and she doesn't really know where she stands with her crew. We do see Diogo telling Ashford that he should be the captain.
And you notice that Drummer says it loud enough to make sure Diogo can hear it. I mean, she looks over at Diogo.
He's a little rat right now. I don't like
it's
him
the
right
face
now.
Tattoo.
It's the
face. It is the face tattoo.
Sure, that's all it is.
That's how it happens, Eric.
I'm scared for Diogo because I like him as a character, but he's just going into the dark side. Like, he's just...
He's a punk.
He's fixated in... I just want a war. I just want to be a belter, and this
is
how I'm going to do
it. He's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, pretty much. And one of the scenes and moments that actually I really enjoyed from Drummer is the next time that Ashford approaches her, and she says, "You can't stop giving me advice, can't you?" And then he's like, oh, well, I'm just trying to help. I'm trying to be the good kid. But then she calls him out. And I really love that she says, yet you call me out in front of my crew. When the turn comes and you take over, they will know it's because you had to. No choice. And it scares me. I love that. But what is she going to do to prevent that from happening? Because we're starting to see Diogo question her. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the ship is questioning her. What is she going to do to make that difference so that her crew respects her? And I thought it was really interesting.
You want to hear the really scary thing? I think if I'm reading the characters writing correctly here, I think that she realizes that the answer is she can do nothing.
Yeah.
That is what made her put her foot down. Because before, when she wouldn't really put her foot down and step up and say, I'm the captain, it's because she was assessing the situation. She knew she was a captain. She knew that it was never from a point of weakness. It was a tactical thing, a strategic thing for her, because she knew that she's in danger of a coup. And so she was trying to assess the situation. And once she came to the realization that, and I wasn't convinced of this until that very scene you were just talking about, when she calls him out on exactly why he did what he did, And she said, oh, and I bet you were just all praise about me when I left, so that when you do finally have to take over, it's because you absolutely had no choice. Like, she calls out exactly what he's doing. That's when I'm like, okay, so she obviously gets it. She sees through his tactics. She's predicting his tactics. Even when she isn't there to observe them, she knows. She knows she's already lost, and therefore she's going to put her foot down. She's going to go down fighting.
And it breaks my heart, because I love Drummer. She has grown on me, and I've loved her since season two. They have developed this character so well. She's so strong, but she's not strong enough. Mm-hmm. And that's her downfall. And I don't want to see what happens to her.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be so tense for her. I am hoping for the best, but I think that I know where this is going, and it sucks. So,
well, I really loved when he called her out for sending Naomi away, for letting Naomi go. And he's just like, oh, well, now we don't have any probes. And she's just like, oh, well, we could convert some drones to probes, because a captain must know their ship. And I literally sat there and was like, you come for the queen, you best not miss. Like,
she said, captain must know her ship.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that in there too.
Yeah.
She definitely got ownership of it there.
You come for the queen, you best not miss. I mean, and she made sure that was heard, because he didn't bother to know the Nauvoo / Behemoth. He just came in because Anderson Dawes sent him. And that's the other thing I think we need to keep in mind, is she knows Anderson Dawes. Mm-hmm. She knows his playbook. He tried to play her. Before, he tried to manipulate her into joining him again, and she's made it very clear that, you know, she has no tolerance for any of his BS anymore. And she's called him out on the fact that he works for Anderson Dawes. Naomi has called him out for the fact that he works for Anderson Dawes. Dawes sent them on purpose. He sent this guy on purpose. And so I think, and I mean, especially when you look at, first of all, I love Davis Trithairn. I think he's doing an incredible job as Ashford. And I wanted to write down his speech to Diogo when he was being the manipulative little, he changed his chair to say rat. What was it? Avid rat hair. Cause he liked to vandalize people's chairs. So he colored in letters of his name. So
you
it said
the actor
avid,
on the set?
Yeah. David's right there. And made it so his name is Avid Rat Hair. And I was like, now I'm going to have to call Ashford a rat. And I hate that, because I love you. but he gives this speech to Diogo when he's doing his little manipulative rat routine. And he says, you know, I've drunk real earth whiskey out of a UN admiral's mug and then scuttled her ship. I flew past flew dark past a Martian battle group, and they never even knew I was there. And I've seen friends breathe the vacuum and watched my only child burn. So when I tell you to tread carefully, you would do well to best stop talking. Like, he was chosen by Dawes for a reason. Dawes could have chosen anybody. People like Dawes. Naomi liked Dawes. Like, and Naomi is a tough customer to please. And she had positives as things to say about Dawes. He could have picked anybody. And he picked this guy who went through all this stuff. He knows what he's doing. He picked a guy who is gonna charm the pants off you and then, you know, steal them and hide them so that he can wear them later, right? He knows what he's doing. So, like, he knows exactly what buttons to push here. And, you know, question of what's going on with him aside, you know, she can catch most of his stuff, because she knows the playbook. She's worked with Dawes before. She knows what to expect from him. But I'm not sure she expected everything.
You know, another thing that I find really interesting about this scene that you were talking about, the speech that Ashford gave to Diogo, it is yet another example of the writer's ability to multitask on this show. We were talking about how we've got very limited time left in this season. So here you've got a scene where, number one, you get a strong performance from an actor of a character with Ashford. Number two, you've got him making it clear to the people who are going to eventually plan a coup, if that's what ends up happening. I mean, it seems that it's obvious they're building toward that, that he is in control of them. This is not something where all of the workers are going to rise up and shove him out of the way. No, he is the guy who's going to make this happen if it happens. He is not going to let Diogo, you know, shove him closer to this confrontation. He's the one in control of it, and Diogo needs to back off. Mm-hmm. Number three, this is exactly what is then used in a later scene to show that Drummer knows what he's doing, because she predicts that this is exactly what he would have done, which then also, as you said, number four, goes toward demonstrating that Drummer understands Dawes and his playbook. And I could probably list a few other things here too. There's just, you know, I end up gushing so much about the writers on this show, but if you look at this one scene and you look at how many different pieces, well, another thing is the misdirection of the audience, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to wonder, okay, maybe Ashford really is on the side of good and he just has a different way of doing things than Drummer, until we get to the Drummer scene where she points out, yeah, no, I see what you're doing. On so many different levels, just one scene can affect so many different things that the writers need to accomplish. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant.
It's a strategic game of chess, and I mm-hmm. love it, because every piece that's being moved has a huge impact. We're almost like at the end of the game of chess, and there's just a couple more moves before you get a checkmate. That's just the reality. We've set ourselves up ever since season three started, and now comes the big plays, and it's amazing to see how far they've gotten in short amount of time, I will say. Right. So
the other thing I loved is that we haven't seen much of the behemoth. We've only seen where Naomi was fixing the panels at the very beginning.
You mean physically?
Yeah, physically. We haven't seen mm-hmm. much of the inside, right? We've seen where the docks are, where Naomi left. We've seen just, random halls. We finally got to see what the actual inside of, the drum looks like. The giant mm-hmm. round part of the ship that is the shape of the Nauvoo, like what we recognize as the Nauvoo. We finally saw it. This giant space that is just partitioned off for different things behind Drummer when she was messing with the drones. And I was very excited just for that tiny glimpse of this space that we may or may not get to see used the way it was in the books. But I was just so excited. It looks so vast and mm-hmm. huge. And it just reminds you, because we've been in these little spaces for so long, it reminds you just how big this ship is. Right. And I just thought it was so cool. I kind of kept looking at it while they were talking. So it's like, look how big it is. My little baby's all grown up, my little Nauvoo. So yeah, that was a really cool little detail as well.
It's cool to get those little shots interspersed with, I mean, you're always on close-ups of characters and stuff, because there's always a very dialogue-heavy show, like most shows are. So it's important that they throw us things like that to establish the environment. And that was definitely a really cool thing to finally get to see mm-hmm. the scope of the ship and the scale of the ship. So, well, let's move on then to the Rocinante. I'm going to throw one thing out here real quick. Probably one of my favorite moments in the episode. I don't know if it was my ultimate favorite, but was the conversation between Amos and Alex.
Yes.
And we talked a lot about fear last episode. And Alex says to Amos, I wish I could go through life without feeling fear. And Amos says, no, you don't. And I thought that was just such a really powerful thing to say, because we do kind of have, again, another episode dealing with fear, which is what led to the suicide earlier on. I believe that Drummer is afraid of losing her ship. And so how is she dealing with that fear? She's going to fight. She's going to put her foot down. She's going to say, listen, until you succeed in taking it from me, I'm still the captain. We're still seeing fear and how different people are reacting to it, including in a more overt, explicit way, Amos reacting to his fear, Alex reacting to his fear, and them actually discussing it. And I'm glad that they pointed out that fear is important. Mm-hmm. You don't want to actually go through life not feeling fear. It's unhealthy. It's unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's sociopathic.
I love watching men talk about their fear too. It's something you don't see a lot in television with men. I've discussed it before. Mm-hmm. Men talk about their feelings on this show is something that I remember when I first really started paying attention to television, it was like something I only saw on certain shows, and it was because they were related.
Right.
Well, I mean, friends.
Generationally, I mean, my parents and their parents and stuff, men were taught you don't, any expression of emotion is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability equates to weakness.
Yeah.
And men don't show weakness. Therefore, don't make yourself vulnerable. Therefore, don't show or talk about your emotions.
And that's why like I said before, that's what I love about the men on, especially the men on the Rocinante, because we've had so far since episode 7, they've all been talking about their feelings with each other. And fear especially is something very important, because you don't hear a lot of men talk about what they're afraid of. Mm-hmm. And so this was really important to me to see these two guys, and like Amos in his own way, comforting Alex.
Right.
For his fear in his own very special way. So that stuff is important to me. I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm so attached to Holden, because he especially is a very vulnerable male character and a very emotional male character. So I love seeing Alex and Amos be this.
But it's very interesting because we have three men and they all display a different way of emotions. Mm-hmm. You have Amos, who is a one really huge extreme of what he shouldn't really be. And then you have Alex, who's on the other extreme, who's very vulnerable right now, very emotional. He's scared. And you have Holden in the middle. He's scared, but he also has that duty of being a captain. So he has to, in a lot of ways, push his feelings aside to be who his crew needs him to be. So it's really interesting to see different forms of emotion and different ways of interpreting how they're feeling from these three different men. And I really do appreciate the vulnerability that we are seeing in Alex, because it does make him more human. Mm-hmm. And even though Amos does not feel a lot of stuff, he's aware that that's not right. He's completely aware of it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that.
And he is aware enough of not only that it's not right, but of the problems it's caused irreparably so for himself and therefore doesn't want other people to become him.
Yeah.
So Shannon, I agree with you that we don't often see this in media, in television shows and fiction and such.
Certainly it's getting not in better, a healthy though. Way.
True. I will say though that within our society, I have over the far, far too many years that I've been alive. I'm not going to say how old I am again, but it is getting better, and men are expressing their emotions and concerns to one another more than I used to see it when I was a lot younger. And that's encouraging. And again, the writing of the show, the way they're doing it on the show is realistic. These are things, these are ways in which I've seen other men in real life trying to communicate emotions to one another.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, right down to the suicide. He was trying to establish a connection with Anna, like, hey, so you're a Methodist, right? Like, hey, we have something in common. Maybe we should like talk and something. Like, he's trying to get her attention.
Right.
I see that sort of dealing with emotions. I see Alex, and thank goodness to a lesser extent, I see Amos, but then sometimes, I mean, I see people whose expression of emotion, it's very blunt. It's very yeah, there's this. What about it? Like that, and that's the best they can do. But again, I not only are is it good that we are seeing it in this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's good that we're seeing it in a way that actually happens when it does happen. Right.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that they have such integrity about that way of the storytelling.
It's really interesting because I'm going to say this, and it's really not going to help anybody who already thinks I'm crazy and psychotic. But
you're the crazy and psychotic one? That's new.
Hey, that's between you and your shrink.
I thought it was me.
I'm the only sane one here.
I understand Amos. There's a lot of times where experiences make us very closed off. And the way that we deal with certain things is very different from what somebody else would deal, how somebody else would deal with the situation. And I mean, it's so relatable to see a character that is seeing kind of like the whole entire world burn, and he's like, well, that's just how the cookie crumbles, that's just how it is, and we're just gonna have to work with what we have. And
right,
I understand that. I understand it because life has thrown me a bunch of stuff, and although other people would not be able to handle it in the way that I did, that's just the way that things go. And I love that. I really, really love that.
You build up emotional scar tissue. I mean, just like any sort of injury to your body physically, you get scar tissue, which is thicker. It's more hardened, and it protects that injured part of your body from future injuries, to at least to some extent. I mean, that's something that happens to our psyches too. And to Amos, I think he's made up now of so much emotional scar tissue that's just, it's hard for him to feel anything anyway, because, you know, the nerve endings in that scar tissue don't really exist anymore.
It doesn't make it right, though. Doesn't make it right. I mean,
you can have, well, I mean, Andrea, as you know this, you can have emotional scar tissue and make the right decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Amos is, so it's not that it's not capable of being done, but you're correct that Amos happens to be not doing the right thing all the time.
The most basic example is me moving a billion times. If I decide to pick up my stuff right now and move somewhere else, it's not going to affect me the same way that somebody else who has not moved as many times as I have would be affected. They would be distraught. So then they would see me and be like, why don't you have any emotions towards this situation? And it's like, well, what am I going to do about it? That's just the way that things are. And it sucks to not have any feelings in terms of that, but that's just how the scar tissue, that's just how it goes. Yeah. So,
but it also comes down to
the character.
No, I mean, that's a great analogy. Mm. It also comes down to, you've experienced these things before. You know what to expect. So you're not going into it with a bunch of fear, because you know exactly what could happen that could go wrong, what probably won't happen that people might be worried about, but the reality is that almost never happens. So you don't have to worry about other things. Like, your expectations are tempered in such a way that you're able to adapt. And that, like I said, is a great analogy. We see that in Amos, whether it's interrogating the reporters to try to figure out how to fix the ship, whether it's some of the stuff back in season two, the stuff in season one. These are all things that he doesn't have these overreactions to, because he's been through a lot of these types of things before anyway. He knows the likely outcomes. He has expectations that are tempered in experience.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we're just seeing him not react emotionally because there is no unknown. There is no unexpected.
Yeah. And it's the churn. You have to adapt. Yeah, right. If you do not, somebody's going to adapt for you and you're going to be left in the dust. That's just the way it goes. So,
yeah.
I mean, we also got, staying on the Rossi, but not on the Rossi, we did also get some vulnerability from Holden when they're watching his goodbye video, because he opens with, you know, I've gotten you guys in enough trouble. What else is new? Like, 'cause he cares about them and he feels bad that, he's like, I'm leaving because I'm tired of putting you guys into danger. And at the very end, he goes, thanks, both of you, for everything. Like, it's just, that's so nice. Usually when we get stuff like that, it's between like a man and a woman from my recollection. She's like, oh, well, thank you for everything. And then like they meet up again and it's all fine. But it's these three friends that had been together for 6 months, just them. And they stuck together through trying to save their ship. And they stuck together through, they trusted him and went through the ring. And they trusted him as he was trying to figure out what to do next. And they still trusted his judgment. And so, you know, you trusted me, your captain, and your friend. And thank you for everything in case I don't come back. Like, that's obviously what he's saying, because the way he's wording it, I might not come back and I'm sorry. And the best I can do for you is to not get you in any more trouble. And also, don't follow me, I swear to God. Like, it's just, right. And the fact that Amos's first response is, you know, we have to follow him, right? If they're going after him, we're going to go punch him in the face. Like,
of course.
I just, you know, the fact that they're so defensive of each other and they want to help each other in the ways that they can, hold him by leaving, Alex by trying to stay logical and figure out the best logical way to fix things. Then Amos just like, I will punch them in the face for all of you. Like, it just was really nice. And like, Holden's not even there and you're still feeling their relationship and their bond. And it was nice. And like, yes, they're scared, but they still care about each other so much that like, they're going to support each other and they're going to find ways to help each other. And I really like that.
Right.
One, before we jump to one of the biggest parts of the episode, I think that one of my favorite lines in the Rocinante was when Amos is saying, alien ships, magic gates, Naomi bugging off to play Belter, Holden doing, I have no clue what Holden is doing. I thought it was really funny. And it's
very
just
good.
Amos has such good lines that are his character. And I really enjoy it. When he was telling Alex about the girl that he knew
in Voldemort.
We're going to Harry Potter.
Don't worry. Everyone has trouble saying Baltimore now.
Okay, good.
Or Baltimore. We say Baltimore where I am.
Well,
we don't
say
Baltimore.
We're not talking about pizza again. But when he's talking about that and that just idea that she's drinking and then she just jumps.
Yeah.
And he's like I'll take you down with me. It's just so Amos. So I love his lines. His delivery is amazing.
I thought it was very important that he said Naomi off to play Belter. Almost as if he knows that she is playing. And speaking of, really quick, I do have to say, we saw Naomi again, and I really love that she's basically willing to fight the MCRN for the Rossi. Like, she's ready to throw down. She's here playing Adele, Hello from the Other Side, trying to reach them. And she's like, you can't possibly believe that the same James Holden that saved your planet is going to go blow up innocent people and then just calling them names and stuff. Just like, she will literally fist fight the Martians for these guys that she loves, and she's almost there. And I loved that bit. I thought that was very funny while she's playing her little Adele moment. Hello from the other side. She's trying, guys. She's trying.
Sure. All right. Shall we move on to the elephant in the room?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Let's do it.
All right. I don't even know who wants to take this one at this point.
As I said on Twitter last night, it's the good-ish. I can't say the word on the show,
right. But
I literally yelled out loud when the scene started, here comes the good-ish. Like, I'm ready.
It's very interesting that you guys talked about the whimsical aspect of Dandelion Sky. And the whole entire time that I was watching this episode, I thought of Alice in Wonderland. That just the falling into the rabbit hole. Holden just jumps and he's just going into this unknown. And I really love just the whole entire him talking to Miller. Sassy investigator, actually. He has some good lines in this.
A great sass off, honestly.
He does. And I really enjoy a lot of the stuff that was done. What I want to do, because I think that there's a lot to dissect in this, is I'm going to throw some of the stuff that I enjoyed, and then we'll just bounce here and there. The whole entire idea of free will, it was a very interesting topic that was discussed at the beginning of the episode. And the way that the investigator talks about it is that Holden is just following a program, just like the investigator. Holden is a key, and this brings us back to why can Holden see the investigator but nobody else can, and the way that Miller describes it in its simplest form, because he can go very technical, is I can push different synapses and different aspects of your brain, and here I am, and you can hear my voice, and you can see what I'm wearing. So the proto molecule goes beyond what Holden sees as rational, as an okay aspect of what we're capable of seeing. So I thought that was very interesting. And just the way that Sassy Investigator discusses it is, it's kind of like calculus, amoeba, monkey, Mozart. And he sees how different and complex these two individuals are, or these two entities, because I don't want to call them individuals. So as Holden is going through the rabbit hole, he's getting to the station or whatever it is at this point. He's trying to figure out what the purpose of him being there. He feels like he's always there at the right time. And I know that, Eric, you were talking about the idea of how you enjoyed this this concept of free will. So I'm just going to let you talk about that before we get into a deeper into the rabbit hole.
I've always found the concept of the nature of free will interesting. And I like the way they presented it here. Miller pointing out to Holden that, you know, well, you're here because of the programming, and then Holden turning around and saying, programming? Okay. And then he hits his thrusters. It's like if Holden isn't enacting free will, if he's not acting the way Miller wants him to, then is it really merely him following his programming? And yet the spin of that is that Miller did get him there. So somewhere in between programming and free will is influence.
Yeah.
And so there's that balance somewhere in between that I think is where reality a lot of time actually lies. So, and I think we see this. This is another one of those situations where the show presents a really deep concept and presents both sides of it and kind of lets the viewer try to figure out which case is consistent with their own perspective.
And just the idea of free will on its own. Like, we feel like we're able, we have that free will, that ability to choose what we want to do. But at the same time, in a deeper way, you kind of don't have that free will. There are certain restrictions that you have. So that balance is very interesting, because where do we fall in terms of that scale? So I thought that was pretty interesting that, yeah, you can tell somebody that they have the free will, but there is something holding you back from truly being free. So.
But it's still your circumstances, and you're free to act within the parameters that that define your circumstances. So again, it's kind of that, you know, a little bit of one thing, a little bit of the other thing.
Yeah. I really loved earlier in the season, there was the discussion of being special and being chosen. And I really loved the conversation between them when he initially says, I always had this crazy notion of free will. And the investigator says to him, and I don't remember what the censored version was, so I'll figure it out. But he says, then how come it is that every time there's a cluster storm, I think that's what it was, every time there's a cluster storm situation in the universe, there's James Holden shrugging his shoulders saying, how the hell did I end up here? And Holden's just, you know, you're really pumping me up for this mission. And this is the line I really loved. The investigator says to him, you're the patron saint of lost causes, kid. Quit running from it. Like, so it kind of makes you question, like, yeah, is he special? Because he was told he wasn't. But like, now the investigator is saying maybe he is. Or the fact that he's presenting himself as, like, without even knowing, the patron saint of lost causes, because he always takes up lost causes, even if he doesn't intend to, even if he doesn't want to, he always ends up right in the middle of the lost cause. And so, you know, Holden does laugh at that. And it's like, yeah, because somehow there you are shrugging your shoulders. How did this happen? Because you put yourself there because you care. You're compassionate. You're a fighter. And it makes you special without you wanting to be.
Yeah, all the way back to the pilot episode.
Yeah, it makes you the kind of person who becomes the patron saint of lost causes. And I love that he clearly picked that up from Holden as well, because like a manifestation of the protomolecule isn't going to know what the patron saint of lost causes is, which obviously is St. Jude. But I just really like that. And I also loved the when he stopped the thrusters, he was like, oh, I was just exercising some free will. He's like, oh, no, you're just being an asshole, which that's going to be my new tagline every time I ADHD impulse do something. He's like, I'm just exercising my free will.
There you go.
It just was really interesting. And then, of course, he stops outside the station.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's his fruit. He's scared. And he's like, what's in there? I'm just stuff. So I don't want to go in there now because you just said just stuff. Do you even know what the case is? And like, so he is at the same time fighting this programming, this curiosity, this burning desire for the truth, because he still has that fear. He still has that logical fight or flight.
Yeah.
And but he still goes.
And the thing is that from the very beginning, Holden has been in the middle of everything. He's been the center of a lot of the stuff. And Holden, in a lot of ways, is a tool to everything that's happening. Whether he wants it or not, he is a key. The reason why Miller needs him and the reason why he told him to stop as they were going through the ring was because he needed Holden, and we do see it. He does say it. He says there's civilization, locked doors, and a timer. Those doors need to be opened, and that's what Holden is there for. He needs to build that connection, and whatever that connection is, we still don't know. Exactly.
Complete the circuit.
But it's really interesting, and you did mention it, Shannon, when Holden is asking Miller what in the world is inside this place, and he's like, do you even know what the case is? And he's like, yeah, sure, find a record room, and then we have to read the file.
It breaks my brain, but here you go, kid.
We can either find the answers or we can find another clue, and it's frustrating because Holden is kind of like a puppet at this point. He's a tool that does stuff. Yes.
He's the tool that can do things.
Oh, and the other thing that's very interesting, that aspect of being the tool is...
Oh, yeah, existing.
The idea of existence. Miller cannot turn the key, but Holden can physically do it because he's alive. He's there. And that's another thing, is it's kind of like he's acting on behalf of the protomolecule to build that connection.
He also refuses to kill the Martians. Mm-hmm. So there's more free will, because Miller says, like, I could just kill him. He's like, no. Because, yes. I mean, earlier in the episode, he was like, ugh, Martians, which mood. But, you know, he says, no. Like, yeah, it could save us, but do not kill them. That's not okay. That is bad, Miller. That is bad.
Like, bad Miller.
So he's still got the controls. The question is, what is he going to do with them?
Right.
Complete the circuit. I love the interactions between Holden and Miller. There was an interesting moment between them where we bring back Julie. And that's something that Miller, every single time that she was brought up, he would disappear. He would be away from Holden. And I really liked what Holden was telling Miller about dying together and what happened to Miller. It's you die together, but she was already gone, wasn't she? She couldn't feel any more pain but one atom at a time. Oh, so he's asking him if he was pulled apart one atom at a time or if he burned. And after that, Miller
chill,
disappears.
Holden.
Like,
chill.
He tore Miller apart. on that one. And it's really interesting because the music that was playing really brought me back to when Miller finally meets Julie in her proto-molecule form. So it was a really emotional, without it being an emotional moment, because it brings you back to the pain that Miller felt when he met Julie. And that's something that the investigator is trying to avoid. He's trying to focus on the mission that he has to do, and it's built that connection. But then Holden brings him back to whatever happened to Julie and whatever happened to Venus. So I thought that was very interesting.
I mean, we also got fan observations sent in about that very thing that you just said, that people noticed that music cue. We got it from Alex and Belter Stark, both said that they picked up on that, that it was playing that Miller and Julie music cue from Home. So I thought, you know, I thought that was a good segue because you mentioned it, and I thought it would be, they threw that at us last night as well.
Speaking of throwing things, can we talk about the grenade?
That is the thing I was laughing about earlier, where I said I don't want to think about it. That if you guys were confused what I meant by that, it was that. It was the poor lieutenant just splat and absorbed into the station and used to repair the station. Oh boy.
Well, it's good. He was useful then.
I guess.
I mean, everybody's got to have a purpose, right? That's good.
You turn into mush and you just become,
I don't know. The station?
He becomes what he becomes. That was an interesting, I wanted to stop that scene frame by frame to see what happened, because it happened so fast. You're just like, whoa, what happened? I don't understand.
Yeah. Station got a little bit pissed off.
Yes.
So this man threw the grenade. And it seems like the station has recalculated the speed that it senses is dangerous. It seems now that anything moving as fast as a thrown grenade is too fast. And the ships have been slowed down. And these ships are already moving. So I would like y'all to just imagine, we saw it with Naomi. We saw it with Tilly and Clarissa. This is not going to end well, because now we have ships that were moving. I think we saw them. They were moving around. I know Holden was moving at one point around 1400. I think they're all moving around. They're moving less than the speed limit. So imagine 1400 clicks or 14,000 clicks to anywhere like 16,000 clicks. They're all moving about that fast. We're talking the speed of a thrown grenade by a human man.
Now, hold on. The question is it the throwing of the grenade or is it the grenade's explosion?
It's speed.
But you could then also argue that the man walking into the room, it could be the speed of him walking in to then throw the grenade to then explode to. I took it to mean that the new speed limit is the speed at which the grenade itself exploded.
Well, I'm thinking, so we saw bullets shot. Grenades explode very fast. And these are futuristic grenades, so it's not like you have the tick, tick, tick. Like, this is probably a grenade that explodes upon impact. It's a smart, because you don't see him pull any pins, he just throws it, right?
Yeah, but the activation of it, I mean, if it's still...
I just get the sense that
the actual expansion of the grenade should still be limited by general physics. I mean, making it more high tech isn't necessarily going to increase.
But it doesn't know what a grenade is. It's just a thrown object.
Not until once it explodes.
A bullet comes out very fast.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. He threw. It's the shooting, not the bullet. It's the throwing, not the grenade. It's the doing, not the slingshot or hitting.
But if it was the shooting, then that would be your thumb or your index finger.
But okay, never mind.
It's the motion of the projectile.
I'm trying to get there.
I understand what Shannon's saying.
I'm arguing that it's a different projectile. It's the shards of the grenade or the concussive force of the grenade expanding. But I mean, we're arguing semantics. Either way, the grenade itself is like the bullets in the sense that that is the projectile.
The ships slowed down. That's what I'm trying to get at. The ships were slowed down to a very slow speed.
Yes.
while everyone's moving very fast.
So
when
now,
a car stops after moving very fast, it has devastating effects. These ships are moving much faster
than a car. If it's actually at the speed of him lobbing the grenade, though, it'll take about 8 more seasons for them to arrive at the station. That's my only concern.
It's just very bad.
They got 3 episodes.
We will see how it all shapes out. Maybe we'll find our answers.
After he threw the grenade, Holden was told to finish it, and he completed the circuit.
Wait, can you say that?
Can you say he completed the circuit with the voice modulator real quick?
You know, please, this is going to become a thing.
Please.
He completed the circuit.
Oh, gosh.
Wrong one.
There is
wrong
one. Oh, see, now you're just being picky.
I am trying to lighten the mood.
Okay, fine, Shannon. Okay, I will do it.
And then he completed the circuit.
He completed the circuit.
Good job, Andrea.
Wait, are we all doing our best Holden impersonations? Because, like, we're all doing deep growly voices. He completed the circuit. So Holden completed the circuit. And what the heck did we see? The coolest nonsense. I almost said a curse word. That's why. The coolest nonsense I have ever seen.
It was beautiful. I thought
so
that
beautiful.
With the little amount of time that they had to just complete this episode, I gathered so much information from those minutes that it was like, again, I have to do my own rewinding to see what happened, because as soon as Holden completes the circuit, everything rewinds to the very beginning of everything. Yeah, it's so interesting to be able to see how everything unfolds, like some of the rings in the universe, the potential destruction of worlds and systems. And
the fact that there are even more than just the one ring. I mean, we saw a bunch of these different portals open up all the way around
and
the bubble.
A bunch blinked shut.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We see those destructions. We see them coming out of losing connection. So it's really interesting. And I found it really fascinating that at the very end, we do see that blue sun. That's just the end of it. So it's really interesting that it comes down to that. And it raises more questions than answers, because
one of them being, you okay, Holden?
Yeah. Do you need some coffee?
You okay? Can you are you okay? You're staring. Are you okay? Oh man. Oh, just like I said, I just read this bit, and this is a very it's hard to imagine what it was going to look like reading it. And this is something you can't narrate. You can't. It would be awful if you narrated it, because it wasn't narrated for Holden. And so I was like really interested to see how we're going to do it. So like I said earlier in the episode, we're getting down to 2 minutes left. And I'm like, what are we going to do? And it just, oh my God. And what a beautiful sequence of events.
Mm-hmm.
And just the shots were beautiful. And
The effects were gorgeous.
Seeing this thing that was described to me with words and seeing it play on a screen and still getting the vibe. Like one of them was Holden in the book described feeling pain when a bunch of the gates were destroyed, and Holden screams after the one sun explodes. Right. I was like, oh my God. Like it was just really cool getting to visually see it without a narration. And still getting like a similar story. And like I said, this is only because I just read this. There's a good chance I probably would not have remembered any details if I hadn't just read it. But it's just such a beautiful scene with so much information packed into it that you want to watch it a bunch of times, not just for the information, but to watch it over and over, because it's just so beautiful. Like I said right after the episode, I was like, bravo, guys. And I tagged everyone who was involved in that. Like, production and VFX and the writers. Like, it was gorgeous and stunning and so much mystery and questions and answers and more questions. And I haven't, I've barely stopped thinking about it since last night or 2 nights ago.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it was so well done.
And, yeah. And it's really interesting that on its bare bones, you see, to me, it was Holden in kind of like that fetal position. It's him not knowing, him still learning, him just being so tiny in comparison to everything around him. And that was really interesting. And I really, again, I love the last sequence. It was a throwback to Mass Effect when Commander Shepard touches the Prothean beacons, and then everything, he sees
Holden
everything.
Didn't fly, though. That's lame. He didn't float. He just collapsed like a loser.
Like
at least Shepard can fly.
Yeah, we'll have to talk to the show producers about that, Shannon. Yeah. We'll pass that on to them for you.
I have a question for you guys, because I was trying to figure out myself. When you see that shot of Holden, like his whole body, right?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of was placed at the moment when we were watching Eros moving, right? Do you think because he was like living, he was seeing things as if, you know what I mean? Like, you get what I'm saying?
No.
He's kind of experiencing it as he's seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm trying to say? Hold on, do you understand what I say when I say it looks like he's experiencing it and feeling, watching and feeling at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think that moment was supposed to represent? Because every other shot was close, right? Except for that shot.
The one of him floating in space?
Mm-hmm. I want to know what you think that was meant to, because I'm kind of debating back and forth.
So when I rewatched, I didn't actually get to finish it. So that scene, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch a second time. Well, I got most of the episode.
I'm kidding.
Doing my best here.
I finally gave you a talking point where I asked you a question.
I know, right?
You weren't prepared. One thing that
I mean, for me, it goes, first of all, there was a point during the sequence, and actually it was that moment where I'm like, oh no, this is like 2001 all over again. Cause I hate the movie 2001. And yeah, you people can send your hate mail to Eric@randomchatter.com. You won't be the first. But I didn't like 2001. And there's so much about this that kind of harkens back to that kind of moment at the end of 2001. And I think that that shot of him kind of floating naked in space was one of those things. Now, fortunately, everything else in this, unlike 2001, made sense and was useful and gave it story points and like it was perfect. Him floating in space, the only thing I can think of is just, I mean, he's naked, he's floating in space. So there's total sensory deprivation. There's the metaphorical vulnerability of being naked, and that kind of the symbolic representation of, you know, having everything else stripped away. So it's just him as a human experiencing whatever he's experiencing. So I think it was what I got from it was just kind of a raw nakedness of everything else material and about the world around him being stripped away. So that it is pointing out that it is exactly him in what he's experiencing in the moment and nothing else exists. And, mm-hmm. and to me, that was kind of the point that it was trying to get across so that we had context for what we were seeing with everything else. And we understood this is about him experiencing Eros and him experiencing these other gates apparently in the bubble and this sun dying and things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There might be more to it than that. And maybe that's a shallow take on it. I don't know. I need to rewatch it, that part.
Mm-mm.
Andrea, did you get anything different out of it?
Nope.
Okay.
I was just torn between whether it was something like that or whether, because the way his, like I said, transitioned from Eros to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Eros was like a kind of curve, right? It wasn't like a ball or an oblong shape. It was curved, right? Holden's body kind of was almost the same shape. And so I was wondering if it was supposed to be a visual, like.
Yeah, I think I'm saying?
Like he's literally following the proto
molecule. I think it was less about it meaning something and more about it being very clever framing by the director of photography to get our eyes to track the shots a certain way. Like, I think it was absolutely intentional. I don't think it was trying to convey a story point as much as it was a way for the DP to be guiding us through the shot visually.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at, though.
Yeah. So I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, for me, it felt like it was telling you that he is in the, not only watching this, he's in the place of this. That's what I was getting from it.
I can see that being what you could take out of it. Absolutely.
I just wasn't sure if I was the only one or not, if I was, like, making stuff up.
Yeah, see, I was still stuck on the 2001 reference at the time until it cut away, and I'm like, oh, thank goodness it's not that. I was so happy. Yeah. All right, so we're running a little long, and I think, I mean, the next couple episodes we're probably going to run long because there's going to be so much content. But so real quick, what were your favorite moments from this episode? Andrea, what was your big moment for this one?
Oh, gosh. I will mention something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a quote by Anna that I really enjoyed. She talks about scriptures and creation, and she says there are two texts, scriptures and creation. If they seem to contradict, it's because we don't understand one of them yet. And I really enjoyed that. That resonated with me. And I think that's one of the things that if you were to tell me, like you just did, what stood out from the episode, it was that. And also just the interactions between Holden and Miller, and just the idea of investigating that we're still building up a case and we're still not sure where it's leading us. So I really enjoyed those two.
I really like the fact that they treat spirituality on this show as something other than a farce.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some really good, well thought out insights about it, and they represent it seriously and respectfully.
And it's not like a fictional religion.
Right.
Like most futuristic sci-fi have
like
made up religions that are allegories for our current religions, but they actually stuck with Methodist. They stuck with a current, like we know this Christianity.
Right. And what's brought up, it's about the spirituality of the religion, not about the religion of the religion, not about the doctrine and the, you know, the rituals and things like that.
Yeah.
It's really about what your spirituality means to you as seen through the eyes of Anna, which is, I think is fascinating. We don't often see that in either movies or television. No,
I really appreciate it. As someone who was raised Catholic, and my mom has kind of fallen more into religion. She actually converted to Catholicism. Mm-hmm. So it's always fascinated me that she did take that turn, because she was never like that when I was younger.
Right.
So I, as someone who loves and respects my mother, even in her, like, especially with her spirituality, because that is what she loves. I love how much respect it's shown.
It's really interesting, the whole entire idea that there are still some people out there that need, like, that see that there is a divide between science and religion. And there, I've had professors that say, like, you cannot be religious and be in this biology class. I've had it. I've been told that. And it's
inappropriate.
And it's really interesting, because you can have those two things come together. I mean, and I think I've mentioned this in one of the episodes. I teach biology. I taught an evolution unit to my students at a Catholic school, and they asked me how I could believe in creation if I was talking about evolution. And it was a really interesting topic, and it was very interesting for me to be able to dive deeper into it so I could show them just how these two things don't always have to go head in head. So I really do like and appreciate that coming together of the religious aspects of what you want to believe, and also having the evidence, having the theory, having the scientific support to those beliefs. So I love it. It's interesting.
It was summed up perfectly, what you're talking about here, in that quote from Anna.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that if the two seem to be in contradiction, it's because there's one of the two that we don't understand yet. And I'm sorry, but I don't care who you are. And I come from a very religious background, but if you profess to completely and thoroughly understand everything about your theology, you're just plain wrong.
And I mean, I read Angels and Demons by Dan Brown when I was pretty young. And that was a central thing of it. And so that's how I kind of, because my mom's a nurse, right? She fully believes and supports medicine and science. Like, I get vaccinated all the time. Prayer is not medicine in our house. Like, we pray for supplement, but you're still going to the hospital. You're still getting that. And so I understood this pretty early on, because I read Angels and Demons way younger than I probably should have. But honestly, the science and religion, it tells you that, like, he believes in God. He says science is how we explain God's miracles.
Exactly.
And that's how I always saw it.
Shannon, what was your favorite moment?
I really love monkeys and microwaves, because I really love that discussion in the book. I really loved how they use that to explain humans playing with the protomolecule. Yeah. I can go into that another time, because we can't talk about it. We don't have time for that conversation. And the vision. The visions, like I said, it sat with me for 2 days.
Yeah.
I've just been dissecting it for 2 days. I've been watching it, looking at GIFs of it. Like, it is stunning. And seeing one of the coolest moments for me from the early books come to screen in such a phenomenal way. I can't shake it. I love it.
Yeah. For me, other than the vision, I would say it was the moment between Amos and Alex, and Alex is being told the story of the woman who takes her two cats up to the roof and is obviously
like
jumping
the
off.
Pharaohs of old.
And Amos says, like a freaking pharaoh, don't worry, I take you with me too.
So pats his face.
I'm like, that's
him,
just
buddy.
So wrong.
Thanks, Amos.
But you know, what did our listeners think as far as their favorite moments of this episode?
So as always, we asked what everyone's favorite moment of the episode was. Guinevere said Alex and Amos, and also Holden and Miller. Stephen DeGatta said Alex and Amos as well. Drummer putting Young Bucks in their place. Guntha said, you know, how well the slow zone and the station translated to screen and the callback from home. Ed Kennedy said Miller when he comes back to talk about Julie for sure. Bianca said Anna's speech at the funeral. And when Bobby said to Holden, think of Alex, Amos, think of Naomi. Madge Doty said Alex, Amos as well. And Holden pushing Proto Miller about Julie Mao until the real Miller showed up. And Gaius said where Amos tells Alex, you know, with the cats, like an effing pharaoh, don't worry, I'd take you with me too.
All right. We also have Pirate. He says the fact that we get full on hard-boiled detective speak out of Miller. Alex said, I feel like the music of the moment when Miller's sitting there and talking to Julie is just a memory of that Arrows scene. And that's something that we talked about in this episode. Angry Belter, the Miller scene, and how when he disappears, he seems to have changed each time, like how he describes being destroyed and being remade. JL, Jackson Hess, Anna and Tilly scene on the observation deck. Anna Von Rake, Miller's talking about Julie. It was so beautiful. And then Hassan, he says, the conversation between Alex and Amos about Alex's fears of being wiped out by the phenomenon.
Lots of good stuff this episode.
Yes.
Too much to read.
I know. Yeah, we had to cut quite
Sorry,
a bit and summarize.
We do not have enough time.
We tried to include as many of you as we could. If you want to be included on the show when we read these, we need to get your submissions in each week by 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or no, we're on Eastern Daylight Saving stuff. Eastern Time.
Oh, my God.
Some people pay attention to that. 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday night. Be sure to get them in by then. But, you know, if you don't get them in by then, we still want to hear from you. So still send them in, even if it's later in the week. Okay, seriously.
Sometimes we record those late and we still put it in the show.
Yeah, in this time we did.
We got some late
Friday
answers
instead
in.
Of Thursday. Yeah. And you know, you can always send us feedback at typebeam@randomchatter.com. We love getting email. Twitter, you can find us at the typebeam. That's with the at the front. Random Chatter is the Twitter account for the entire network. You can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Shannon, where can we find you?
You can find me pretty much everywhere at Chank Beezy.
All right. And Andrea?
You can find me at Katzbears. That's KatzBears.
All right. And of course, as always, you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We've got an entire network full of great podcasts, especially the ones I'm not on. The ones I'm on are mediocre at best, maybe. But
excuse you.
Well, other than this one, obviously, is brilliant. Shannon easily makes up for my mediocrity. I mean, let's face it. If you are a fan of The Expanse, chances are you're also going to be interested in some of the other shows we do. So be sure to check that out. RandomChatter.com. Help spread the word about the Tight Beam. Leave us reviews wherever you're getting the show from. Share us out on social media. Let other people know about the show. If you're talking to people about The Expanse, word of mouth is also a great way to let people know about the Tight Beam. We would also love it if you'd come join our Discord community. If you go to randomchatter.com/Discord, you can join for free. We've got different channels allocated for each of the different shows we have on the network. And then for anybody who donates through Patreon, even if it's just $1 a month, we unlock the entirety of the rest of the Discord server, like another 50 or 60 channels to everybody. So to do that, like I said, randomchatter.com/Discord. You can join for free. If you'd like to help support us financially, randomchatter.com/Patreon. We'll give you more information about that. And then finally, the music you hear in this episode is Ursa Minor by Cell Dweller. And as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.